I'd like to call our meeting of the Health Policy and Finance Committee to order. I want to respect, I understand that Representative Nornes has some other obligations as well, so we're going to alter our agenda slightly here and begin with the House File 3103, the Veteran Home Board Projects, and I think you have Mr. Muster with you as well. We will not actually move the bill. After the conclusion of the testimony, the chair will, for the record, indicate that these items and these proposals will be held over for consideration in our prioritization process. And Representative Nornes, you know all about those words.
Yeah.
Welcome to the committee, and if you'd please begin.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairman Bradley and members. I'd like to begin by welcoming the veterans that are here this morning. You got up maybe kind of early to be here at this time. House File 3103 involves several projects. There's five projects and involving three different communities, including Crooked Falls, where I live, and Silver Bay and Minneapolis. The sum total is a little over $35 million. These projects, in my opinion, are very important as we take care of these special people. And as I visit the Crooked Falls facility, it's pretty hard not to be really sympathetic to the needs that they have. The Crooked Falls facility is a special care unit which would involve 21 beds. To walk through the entire proposal this morning, I'd like to turn it over to Steve Muster, who is the Executive Director of the Veterans Board.
Mr. Muster, welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, good morning. Apologize right off the bat. I've got the wrong house file number on here, so we'll get that corrected. What I'd like to do is introduce one of our board members who's with us, Bob Erickson. Bob is here representing Jeff Johnson, our new chairman. Jeff has a real job and unfortunately couldn't get away today, he appreciates being able to present our bonding.
Mr. Muster, I've had the chance to meet and work with Mr. Erickson and other members of your board. You're very fortunate to have some excellent people on your board.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. I realize that. I'd like to move forward with House File 3103. It includes adult daycare, our Silver Bay clinical upgrade project, the Fergus Falls 21-bed special care unit for Alzheimer's and dementia patients, Minneapolis Master Plan Phase 2, and then the pre-design for the Phase 3 of the Minneapolis Master Plan. Adult daycare is a program that we have been working on for a number of years. It really fits in well with the kind of continuum of care that we're trying to provide at our Minneapolis campus. Fits well within the long-term care initiative in the state. Our surveys indicate that many veterans who actually are on our waiting list could avail themselves of adult daycare services, which allows them to stay in their homes longer. We ended up having a fairly lengthy planning process over the last year and a half, which included our veterans organizations, and they fully support this concept. We have a building on campus which is currently empty, and the monies that we're asking for will make this building habitable for adult daycare. And we've applied to the VA State Home Grant Program for 65% funding for this, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. Briefly, we're looking at 5 to 6 day week operation, 8 to 10 hours a day, looking at serving about 35 clients daily, and between VA per diems and patient pay, this program would be self-supporting. The VA does provide a per diem up to 50% of the cost of care, up to $74 a day, and we believe this would be certainly very sufficient to help support this program. The total cost of this initiative is, for this bonding bill, is $2.2 million. Let me also say that this proposal was supported in the last bonding bill. The governor recommended it, and there was 35% of the cost that was included in the last bonding bill, and this covers the balance of the dollars that we need to get that program started. The second project in this bill is the Silver Bay upgrade. Silver Bay was an old school that's been converted to a nursing home. It's awful difficult to do, and we've gone through and reviewed the current construction standards for a nursing home, and really what this project does is to the extent that we can bring this building up to today's construction standards for long-term care. It also includes intergenerational care for adult daycare and child daycare, and probably most important, or as important as the others, we have been cited by the fire marshal on real storage deficiencies, and this project helps to correct that as well. And so what we ended up doing was both going through both the Department of Veterans Affairs standards and the Minnesota Department of Health standards and compared the two and identified areas where we felt we needed to make improvements. We're also able to excavate underneath the building to create the storage area that we need and vehicle storage for our buses and other vehicles. And finally, in Lake County, there was a gaps analysis done on elder services, and they did identify that adult daycare was a real need in that area, and we are trying to, in some way, in a small way, take care of that that need. When we put the new roof on the building, we actually designed the roof so that if this project were funded, we wouldn't have to go back and redo some of the roof parts. And so we've designed the roof so it accommodated the kitchen expansion, new entrances, and some administrative space. Total cost of this project is $4.8 million. The next project, which is near and dear to Representative Nornes's heart, is the special care unit at Fergus Falls. We have a significant waiting list at many of our facilities, and Fergus Falls is included in that. They typically have anywhere from 50 to 80 residents on their waiting list. That waiting list has maintained itself over the last 3 or 4 years, and so this project helps to satisfy that need. Also, greater than 50% of our residents at all of our facilities have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's and dementia, and one of our goals is to create special care units at all of our facilities to take care of this special population, and this particular project meets that that need. Let me just go on. This project will create 4 semi-private rooms, 9 private rooms, and then some respite or swing space. And part of this project also includes some lease space for the Department of Veterans Affairs outpatient clinic, which we currently have sandwiched in between some rooms at Fergus Falls. And this gives them space to not only do their current clinic, but expand their services to veterans in the area. Looking at about 36,000 square feet, and you can see the other square footages. This is the only project that we have that will have an increase in an operating cost, and at this point in time, we're projecting we will need an additional 31 full-time employees. Equivalents and about $2.2 million. This is a biennium cost. And so the total cost of this project is $7.7 million, and we certainly would like to be able to move ahead on this project. The next project is phase 2 of the Minneapolis Master Plan. Over the last few years, we have conducted a master plan process at our Minneapolis facility. The first part of the master plan is adult daycare, which we talked about a little earlier. The second part of the master plan is to add a assisted living unit as well as renovate one of our current buildings for our board and care residents. This is building 16, sorry, at the end of our campus. We are proposing to renovate this building, increase resident privacy with single rooms, improve the bathroom conditions, and this also includes a separate dining area. And we will be relocating the current residents in our board and care unit down to this building. The next part of this plan is to add 45 new assisted living units in a brand new building. This will provide services to older veterans, but we also believe that it will provide services to younger veterans who are in need of supportive environment after their acute care phase, either through veterans or military hospitals. I think we're a little unsure exactly what the fallout of the current wars are, but from what we're starting to hear, that veterans are coming back with post-traumatic stress issues, with other mental health issues, their amputations, and we believe that we can provide the kind of supportive service for these folks as they finish up their times in veterans and military hospitals. This will also provide privacy with separate units. We'll be having a separate dining area, and I think the strength of having an assisted living unit here is that we will have supportive services on campus. Really, the final piece is that we've got a fairly large campus, and the two ends of the campus are fairly distinct, and this project will allow for a better flow of traffic and accessibility to all parts of our campus, and the total cost of this is $20,104,000.
Excuse me, Mr. Musker, if I could just on that point, just looking at, I think you indicated you're applying for some federal monies. Is that the request to the state for bonding, or is that the total and a portion of that might end up being fulfilled by the request, the federal request?
Mr. Chairman, we have included the total cost of this project in this request. This project has also been submitted to the VA for state home grant funding. The difficulty at this time is we are unsure about what's going to happen with the federal state home construction program. In the last budget cycle, the last federal budget cycle, they had proposed to eliminate all state home grant funding from the VA's budget. That was $104 million. Through the efforts of our service organizations and others, $85 million of that was restored. But there's still a lot of uncertainty about what future funding is going to be like with this program. And so to keep this program moving ahead, we're asking for the total amount from the state, with then the potential of having 65% reimbursed as the VA has funds available to do that.
And then as a portion, I mean, you can imagine for us it's a little difficult, too, knowing if we were trying to plug this in. The other question is, since these are called phases, is there a timeline? Because we're dealing from a budgeting or from a bonding point of view of what goes now as opposed to something that might go into the next cycle or the cycle after that. Is there a timeline on phase three, for example?
There are actually four phases. And this, as I mentioned, adult daycare is the first phase, and that was included in last year's bonding bill. But we're asking for the balance of the funds for that project in this bonding bill just to be able to move the project ahead, and also because of the uncertainty of the federal dollars. And then we'll talk about phase three in just a minute, but you know, the goal is to keep this project moving along, because not only do we have a two-year cycle between bonding bills, but then you know, we have to make sure that you know, we can access what little federal dollars, if they're available, are there.
So, Mr. Musker, just to clarify then, and let me stick with phase two because that's where the largest one is. You are, in fact, asking for that $20 million in this bonding cycle, then.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
And then finally, this bonding request also includes some pre-design dollars for Phase 3 of the Minneapolis Master Plan. That includes the demolition of Building 9, which you see on the top slide. That is an old building. It's poorly designed. The exterior envelope of the building is very porous, and we have some significant moisture problems in the building. And so we're proposing to demo that building, construct 125 replacement beds for resident privacy and better bathroom conditions, and then move 125 residents out of Building 17, actually, into the new building, and then renovate Building 17 for patient privacy. And so the cost of this pre-design is $175,000. And that, Mr. Chairman, sums up this particular bill. It's it totals $35 million, a little over $35 million. Certainly be open for other questions.
Well, to members, and then Mr. Muster, you can help us. I think members, your book has a section that has a tab called Veterans Home Board. At least in my book, anyway, there was a clear tab a little bit later on where I believe all of the items that we've just reviewed are. So that's just a placement, and they're not necessarily in the order that we saw them, so you'll want to be sure to review that. And then, Mr. Muster, just to help the committee, in the tabs that we have, the project descriptions for the Veterans Home Board project that you just described, each one of those has a statement of what's called the agency project priority. Know, 7 of 10, et cetera.
Right.
Now, could you explain to the committee just a little bit about what that means? I'm assuming that's the Veteran Home Board's suggestion to this committee, and that would be fair for us to look at it from that point of view. Is that fair?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The board has prioritized all of our projects, all 10 projects, on our bonding bill list, and the adult daycare is the third priority for the board. The Silver Bay Clinical Upgrade is the fourth. The Fergus Falls is the seventh priority. Minneapolis Phase 2 is the eighth. And Minneapolis Phase 3 pre-design is the tenth.
And two members, in addition to that, and this is just something that we as the members here had, we had a sheet, a landscape sheet like this, that shows all the proposal before this committee. There are numbers on the left of it, and I just want to make sure members understand that is not a reflection of prioritization. That's just a number just to keep track. So we'll have, and it might be good from a staff point of view if we had a, oh, I'm sorry, we do have the priority columns in there, don't we? But it didn't carry through then, it looks like, for these additional projects. We do have for the other projects, the 1 through 7. It looks like what we don't have is through 10, so we'll probably have to pick those up on the next iteration of this document. Any questions for members? Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so I have this straight, I'm frequently on the campus there in Minneapolis, and Building 17, is that the first one that you come, as you come in from the north on your campus?
Correct.
Okay, so, and 16 is the one on the south side down in the hole.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When was Building 16 and 17 last upgraded? That's
Muster.
Fairly recent, if I remember correctly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, Building 16, the things that we have done recently to that building is to replace the exterior windows. We removed the asbestos in that building. And those are the most recent changes. So we're currently leasing that building right now to a program that does substance abuse and transitional housing. Building 17, I've been here 7 years, and there hasn't been a whole lot of money put into that building recently that I can recall. There was a major project that was completed on campus, which renovated Building 6, which is the building, if you recall, with the big porches.
Yep.
Along the Mississippi, and that was that currently is our 93-bed Alzheimer's unit. We did some upgrades to Building 9, but primarily some mechanical systems. We upgraded the exteriors of Building 4 and Building 1, and then we also renovated Building 2, which is currently a more of an administrative building.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Munster, on the Fergus Falls addition, my question, a couple of them, is that looks like all new construction. Is that correct? And then you only went with 21 beds, and I was concerned or kind of wondering with a waiting list of 50 to 80, why only the 21 beds?
Mr. Munster?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Samuelson, yes, that is new construction. For those new beds, and we find that even though we have fairly large waiting lists, that once we ask somebody who's interested and on the list to come in, sometimes they may be in another nursing home and have gotten comfortable there, and so we find that it takes one or two individuals from the waiting list to get an admission. So when we looked at sizing this, we looked at what would be an appropriate size, and we thought 21 beds would probably fit pretty well. The other constraint that we have is that the federal VA has created a bed sizing model for every state. And our bed sizing model tells that we should have about 926 beds in the state of Minnesota. And we're kind of bumping up against that, adding these 21 beds. So we have to be careful not to add too many beds, and because that is also then per diem for us, because the federal government provides us with a daily per diem for all of our veteran residents.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Samuelson.
I guess my concern basically is that those 21 beds will most likely fill really fast. And then is there going to be a need elsewhere in the state to build another unit?
Mr. Musser.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Samuelson, and I think you've got a good point. I'm not sure that we can be all things to all veterans. I think we're trying to do what we think is most appropriate at this point in time. We actually have looked at other options in the state, and there may be some legislation that's introduced this year that might address some of those additional issues.
Thank you.
Here, any further questions? Mr. Musser, just kind of and maybe even in part to that question, if a veteran chose to take advantage of a local community nursing home or assisted living or those kinds of things, do the veteran benefits follow them if they make other choices other than the veteran's home itself?
Mr. Chairman, no, not from a state standpoint. They may have some federal veterans benefits that may apply. It would also depend on their service connection, whether or not they're 100% service connected or 70% or greater, and there's some gradations that go with all of that. But from a state standpoint, no.
Okay. If there's no other questions, Mr. Musser, and I hesitate going too far into this. We're probably not going to have the time, as you did apparently in the Senate, to sort of give a report on the Minneapolis facility, the audit that was done, and then I think subsequent to that there's been a review on the part of the board of the other facilities. Could you give us sort of a short version of sort of, and this is outside of this, but I think as long as we have you here, if you don't mind, members, maybe just a brief update as to where you are with the veteran home boards.
Mr. Chairman, certainly, I'd be happy to.
Sorry to get you off guard. I should have asked you ahead of time, but it just occurred to me that with the time we have, we're okay.
Mr. Chair, I was hoping you'd ask that question.
Oh, were you? Well, then I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
I think I know why Representative McNamara wants that. There was some of the facilities were best. Would that be anything close to Representative Nornes? I'm sorry, Representative Nornes. Yeah.
I think you're on the right track.
Yeah, right. Sorry. I was just thinking about McNamara next here.
Mr. Chair, I didn't know how to bring that up. But thank you.
Did I give you a little segue there? Okay. I'm sorry. Mr. Musser?
Mr. Chairman, yes, indeed. The consultants that reviewed our system identified Fergus Falls as, from their perspective, one of the best nursing homes that not only they've seen in our system, but in the state. Laverne was a close second, and so something to be very proud of. As you recall, I think you and I met once or twice, we had a survey, a state survey, that didn't turn out very well. At the end of July, we had 29 citations. We ended up making some significant changes in leadership of the Minneapolis facility, and I actually moved over as the acting administrator. Nancy Dahl, who's here in the audience, moved over as our HR director, and Diane Vaughn, our agency's quality assurance director, moved over as the acting DON. We immediately moved forward to work on some staffing issues and develop a response to the Department of Health citations, and I think worked very hard at doing that. At the end of September, the governor asked then for a system-wide review of all of the veterans' homes in the state to include things like quality of patient care, staffing, finance, governance, and some other issues that the board identified. We prepared an RFP and had a number of responses, interviewed the respondents, and selected a group called Health Dimensions to conduct this review. They were on a very short time frame. We signed the contract on November the 23rd, and the report had to be to the governor immediately after the first of the year. And so with a couple holidays in there, it was a real challenge. They did it. They had a team of 11 people that went out and surveyed our homes. They did a number of things that were internet-based as far as employee surveys, and I think their findings included the fact that I'll just go ahead and quote it: the clear strength of the five Minnesota veterans homes is deep commitment to the mission and vision of the homes by its employees. Overall, the quality of care and the level of services provided to veterans and their dependents was very high, and that the Minneapolis Veterans Home has taken significant action relative to developing and implementing quality initiatives over the past 6 months, and that staffing levels at, in the various veterans home sites are well within expected levels for nursing facilities and down facilities, as they noted. They made a number of other recommendations that includes, working on some operational issues, some management issues, board development, kind of role refinement at the board office, and we're in the process of working on all of those recommendations that that have merit. Important to Minneapolis was that the recommendation was made for the development of a 18-month turnaround plan, which we're currently working on, recruiting and filling the positions at the Minneapolis facility on a permanent basis was important. We have hired an interim administrator, Jack Williams, who's also here, and Jack is going to help us as we go forward. Nancy Dahl, who's also a registered nurse and was our agency HR director, has now moved permanently over to become the director of nursing. We filled the quality assurance position and are moving forward. I think one of the other parts in that is within nursing, we've got three assistant directors of nursing, and we have hired some real crackerjack folks to assist in the management of nursing at this large, complex facility. We're also in the process of developing an external mock survey review. We've got an RFP out on the street for a firm to give us proposals to conduct mock surveys, both from a VA standpoint and from a Department of Health standpoint. At Minneapolis, we're proposing quarterly surveys, at least for the first year, as we move forward, and then for surveys at all the other facilities that we have. Other key things that we're working on, I think, without belaboring this, one of the things that we found in recruiting for an administrator is that while there were a number of candidates, there were not enough candidates that submitted their resumes who had experience in a facility the size and scope of what we have at Minneapolis. And so the board has embarked on a nationwide search for a new administrator, and that search began on March the 1st. I think we resolved the staffing issues at Minneapolis, at not only Minneapolis, but at all of our facilities. We are matching acuity with staffing levels, and we do that nearly every time we have an admission, so that we don't get kind of caught as we did in Minneapolis with kind of losing sight of that whole issue. We also found that when we started to look at the master nursing schedules and the individual schedules that our nurses had, that there were over 100 special schedules that really were designed to accommodate the needs of employee rather than the needs of our residents. Nancy actually went through each of these special schedules. We revised many of them so that we again tried to better meet our resident needs rather than the employee needs, and I think probably we're able to resolve 80-85% of those to the satisfaction of everybody. One of the big issues was mandation, and the Minnesota Nurses Association at the Senate hearing anyway made a big pitch to resolve that issue. Obviously, we would rather not use mandation if we didn't have to. In July of last year, the number of mandated shifts were about 70. That works out to be about 2.5 a day. In December, it was down to 8. And during January and February, we didn't mandate any employees. So the goal is, as we continue to recruit and retain employees, and we've done a pretty good job of that, not only does our agency staffing needs go down, our overtime is a little bit in better check, and our use of mandation hopefully will continue to be very limited. I think the other thing that we're trying to do at the facility is kind of improve our communication. We've increased the number of meetings that we have with our labor unions from quarterly to monthly, and we've instituted an employee council that is working on, which includes representatives from our organizations, which will work on issues of employee morale, employee recognition, and improved communication. The board has also formed three additional committees that will help with the oversight. One of those is a financial resources committee, of which Mr. Erickson is on, a quality assurance committee, and a special review committee whose responsibility is to monitor the progress not only of the 18-month plant in Minneapolis, but plants at all of the facilities. And I think we continue to work on providing better information to the board so that they're better informed and do their job better so that we can do our job better. Kind of a brief summary.
Oh.
Maybe not as brief as you like. But,
well, I think it's excellent. And it's very important, members. I think that to the testimony of yourselves, and I think into your entire team there, that everybody has challenges at times. I think the mark of a good organization is how you respond to it and how you react to it and how you deal with it. And as you get some touch here, a lot's happened. So I certainly compliment you on that. Mr. Erickson, I think there's also been sort of a change from the board's point of view, a kind of a different role. Would you like to make any kind of comment sort of from the board perspective about what's happened there? Mr. Norris, do you have any closing comments? Thank you so much for being here. I know you have to leave now. But
I appreciate the committee's time and that they're flexible. Scheduled this morning, allowing me to be first. And
congratulations on your terrific job there in the Fergus Falls Nursing Home.
I'm very proud of it, and they deserve it. So, thank you,
Mr. Erickson. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Bradley, my name is Robert Erickson from Bloomington, Minnesota. I'm a member of the Veterans Homes Board. I would just like to reinforce, I think, a lot of the messages that our Executive Director, Steve Musser, has given to you. There obviously were some very, very serious issues that were raised, and the board took really immediate action within a week or 10 days after citations in terms of meeting to take and approve the active role that Mr. Musser referred to in terms of stepping into the Minneapolis situation in terms of some of the other employees and very aggressively moving forward on those issues. I think that as Mr. Musser indicated, we have I think really a very good team on our Veterans Homes Board now. We've had some new members that have been appointed. I think any of you that know Jeff Johnson, our new chair, who was just newly appointed, knows that he's going to be very, very aggressive in terms of making sure that we are fully responsive to looking at these issues and put the things in place. One of the concerns that was raised in terms of the report was that there was a feeling on by the consultants and that the board had slipped into being a little bit more of an advisory board as opposed to a statutory board. And I can assure you from my standpoint, when I was appointed, I had no ambiguity on that. I was a trustee of the Minnesota State College and Universities and also the chief financial officer of the University of Minnesota, so I've had a little experience in these things and fully looked at my role as being part of a governing board and one that we have to have the accountability. And I can assure you that Mr. Johnson has shared that. And I think the active participation by our board in terms of the committee structure and things reinforces that. So we have more work to do, and it's going to take some time. We are very concerned about the communication issues. I think we're very concerned about how we set up information so that we can be monitoring the process, the progress on an appropriate basis. And one of the things that I have been pushing for in terms of our financial review committee is to take and tie our budgeting process directly to some quality indicators, so that we can take and be driving the budgeting process by indications of these things. Mr. Musser mentioned the acuity issue, and that was something that unfortunately 3 or 4 years ago they had moved away from acuity-based staffing planning, and there's definitely a reaffirmation that has to be done, because one of the issues that we're dealing with in the state is as our population ages, we have been successful in keeping people in their homes for a longer period of time, which I think has to be one of our important objectives. But when they do come to the facilities that we have, then in many cases they require a much higher level of care. So this is an issue that we probably not only have in Minnesota, but we have on a national basis. But I just want to assure you that As a veteran, I take very seriously the responsibility that we have. I think that particularly when we're in a situation in this country where we now have an all-volunteer force, and for those of us that were not volunteered but were drafted, we still would like to think that that time of our life that we gave up to serve our country is something that is going to be recognized, and I think that we have an obligation to provide a high standard of care to our veteran, and I'm very concerned when I see the things coming out of Desert Storm and the Iraqi conflict in terms of the level of traumatic injuries, in terms of the stress, and also because of advances in medical science, we're able to take and save many servicemen that would formerly not have been able to survive, and they can exist. But we do have, I think, the responsibility of providing a supportive environment for many of those. And one of the other projects that we're going to talk about a little bit later with Representative McNamara is the Hastings facility, which I think is a wonderful example of attempting to be proactive in terms of providing care to our veterans so that when we get into a situation where people have had some chance to be remediated, that we don't just release them and then have this very negative situation where they go out and without the proper level of support are back in one of our homes 6 months, a year later, 2 years later, but at a lower level of functioning. So I appreciate very much the opportunity to be here, and appreciate your time. I can assure you again that all of the board is vitally interested in taking and fixing these issues. We're not going to be quiet, and you won't find me being quiet about facility issues and things, as you well know from our past experience in terms of dealing with some Rochester issues and other things, that if I see something, I'll be quite vocal about it. So we very much appreciate your time and effort.
Well, thank you. There's at least my own observation, a couple of things. One, I think, is that to your credit, really, the board, the organization, didn't sort of try to explain away the surveys and everything, but recognized it and went to action. Secondly, it does strike me there's almost an object lesson. You mentioned, for example, the board, and a lot of us get involved in those things, how it can, over time, sort of slip into a role that's not the right role. Far, far too behind the scenes, far, far too advisory, far, far almost a rubber stamp. And I don't mean to imply it's entirely that, but I think it's an object lesson just in terms of sort of the proactiveness and the reestablishment of it really as being a governing board. I think there's a lesson to that as we watch other boards and as we participate ourselves, that watch out. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. All right. With that, there's no questions. Let's move on, Mr. Musser, then, to the other parts of your presentations. I'm sorry, Danny, come on down, Representative. We'll switch to Representative McNamara's bill, then, which I think are the rest of the presentations. Oh, we are? Okay. Well, then we're going to do your part then next, and then I think we still have some of the governor's recommendation. I wasn't sure if those are overlapped. They are different? Okay. Well, then Representative McNamara will be dealing with, and before we do that, let me just for the record indicate that we will hold over House File 3103 for consideration in our committee priorities. Welcome to the committee, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members. I am here today on behalf of, as you know, Representative Nornes presented some of the other ones, and he was generous enough to allow me to separate the bill out for my own hometown. I noticed in your handout it says in the historic small town of Hastings. So this is a great project. The Hastings Veterans Home was formerly what we call the mental state hospital, one of those that got turned over in the late 70s. It's a great project. What it is one thing's interesting. It fits in the governor's proposal to do things with supportive housing. This is a proposal, and I'm going to let Director Musser go through the particulars of it, explain it. But one thing I want to tell you is our Hastings Veterans Home is unique in the complex of veterans home that we have a younger population. Many of the vets are Vietnam-era vets, and as you've heard mentioned, there's a good chance that our home will be one as we run into the possibility of some of the Iraq veterans coming back needing support needing some temporary housing possibly that our Hastings Veterans Home has done real well with some of the younger population. I think the data you'll get, in their 50s, they're my generation. We're working hard to bring a lot of these folks back into the community. And unfortunately, they're in this real supportive network at the Hastings Veterans Home. And then we say, okay, you're ready to go. And we just open the door and we send them down 18th Street headed towards Highway 61. Well, this is an opportunity here to build 30 units of supportive housing that will offer them a transition instead of us ending up seeing them on the streets of downtown St. Paul, downtown Minneapolis, or downtown Hastings, or Fergus Falls, or Rochester, Mr. Chair, wherever they go. This will give them a chance to kind of transition them. There'll be some help from the Veterans Home, but there'll be efficiency apartments that allow them the opportunity to move back into the community and hopefully not come into the expensive care that some of them have ended up needing later on. So at that, I know you got a busy agenda. I think I'll let Director Musser go through your little PowerPoint proposal, and then when he's done, I would also stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Musser.
You did a great job. thank you, Mr. Chairman. We did provide a handout. Facility was opened as a second state veterans home in 1978. We have a fairly large campus, the Hastings area actually is growing quite
nicely. You have to change that small to what?
We have 200 beds. Currently, we average a census of about 160, 270. As Representative said, our average age of residents is about 56 years old. We have Korean veterans, Vietnam veterans. Half of our population has a diagnosis of some sort of traumatic brain injury. They have substance abuse issues. And we're finding because of the aging of this group and lifestyle issues, they're developing a number of chronic medical problems that continue to complicate their lives. And although we currently serve an all-male population, we do have the ability to serve females at this facility as well. We're proposing to develop an affordable housing program with supportive services. Many homeless veterans need permanent affordable housing, and the real key here is the supportive service piece to maintain their self-sufficiency. We find in Dakota County that there's very little affordable housing that's available, and especially in the Hastings area. And as we get ready to discharge residents back in the community, we think we need to have this kind of supportive services to ensure some level of success as these folks go out on their own. Our services that we provide on campus will be able to provide the support that's needed, whether it's vocation for mental health or chemical health or other sorts of things. Of the residents who are there, probably half at any one point in time are in some sort of job hardening program or job training program. A number of them learn work skills by volunteering or working in the community or working at the facility itself. And again, we can provide case management services with folks there. Having folks being able to go out and live independently really works well, we find, with mildly through severely disabled populations. And I think the key is the support of services. It reduces the need for crisis, emergency rooms, acute psych admissions, and detox. Some of the data that we've been able to gather is that when veterans or anyone is in an environment such as this and has supportive services, they're able to kind of get more independent, and at the end of 1 year, 80% are employed. And so we're proposing to build a 30-unit affordable housing building on the campus. I think one of the things that we find is difficult, not only for us but for other providers, is where do you locate housing units like this? And oftentimes we find that nobody wants them in their backyard. And I think the nice thing about doing this at Hastings is that we've got the property, we provide the services. Building a unit such as this is not an issue, and we believe it's the right thing to do. And we've just completed a pre-design on this particular project, and the pre-design cost is $6.9 million.
Mr. Mustard, this would be then for the building. How are the ongoing, because we've done this in some other pilots, the supportive housing, and another fairly expensive part of it is to have the kind of services that you're talking about. What's the plan for being able to fund those actual services in those places?
We believe, Mr. Chairman, we believe that through services that residents can avail themselves through the county, there's county support programs for housing, most of the residents would be able to not only get some support through these programs, but also be out working on their own and being able to generate income that will pay for not only their rent, but the supportive services as well.
Okay. And then the other question I have is sort of how do people qualify? Is there some sort of, certainly it would be veterans in this case, I assume what you're talking about, but in addition to that, is there any other characteristics that would be sort of qualifiers for being able to take advantage of this? On one extreme, of course, is I think as Representative McNamara mentioned, where you have people literally on the streets where the alternative is being there, but the other would be people who might very well be able to take care of themselves in the community that would come and apply. How do you differentiate so you're serving the right people?
Mr. Chairman, our eligibility requirements are fairly simple. We require that a veteran have served 181 days of active duty service and be a resident in the state. And those are pretty, as long as somebody is honorably discharged and has served 181 days, those are pretty easy requirements to meet.
Well, Mr. Russell, the reason I ask that is the profile you identified were some the mental health, the chemical dependency, some of those things. It sounded like these were people who would have some difficult issues to deal with that you were trying to serve, because it's a relatively small number, and I would assume you don't want to turn this into just kind of an apartment building for people who might have other options. Did I miss something in there? I thought maybe you were trying to target a more specific audience.
Mr. Chairman, the residents that we serve at our Hastings facility have a variety of diagnoses, not just mental health issues or substance abuse issues. They could have some chronic medical problems that they need some sort of supportive services for. The real key with being able to find a discharge location for somebody who is ready to be discharged, who has their mental health issues in check, as well as any substance abuse issues under control. Our goal is to the extent we can, return veterans back into society so that they can be independent. But we also believe that this particular group would benefit greatly by being able to have an environment with supportive services as they transition back into mainstream society.
Mr. McNamara,
I think many of these individuals would be coming from the current veterans' home systems. And we use Hastings, I think, as a base for this program, and many would come from our existing population. Is there 160? We have room for up to 190. I think we're around 160 today. So many would be, we currently transition many, unlike Silver Bay Laverne, where there are a lot of World War II Korean vets that unfortunately will not transition back into society. They're there they generally tend to leave by death. In our case, in Hastings, we have a number of Vietnam vets who have been through some challenges, chemical dependency, mental problems, oftentimes caused by their service-related, many of them. Now they do get that in check with the great support that we have at the Veterans Home, and literally we kind of let them out on the street sometimes, where if we could put them in this transition home, they'll be better to acclimate. And this is one where we're seeing a void here, where we don't have, because they'll use a couple of the services, like you asked about, Mr. Chair. They may need to go see the nurse maybe once a week, or one of the other supportive services that we offer there, what they'll be able to use, the health club or whatever it is, because a lot of them tend to get a job after they arrive in Hastings, and then this allows them maybe to go from here on. Maybe the next step would be to go to a regular apartment building or something as such. So many of them would come from the existing structure. Almost all of them, Director, wouldn't they come from the existing home?
I would suspect most of them would.
Yeah, thank you. I can understand that population. My only reason was, I think you got a great idea here for having people who really have some very strong supportive needs, and it would be a shame to turn that into kind of an apartment place for people who probably can transition on their own. I don't mean to make a big deal about it, because the profile of the people you're talking about make all kinds of sense to me.
Yeah, but, and I'll just tell you, folks, I can think of a couple of these personally, because I actually just really think this home's important. It's real close to my town, so I spend a fair amount of time up there. These are some guys that served in Vietnam that really, with a little bit of help, which we've been able to give them, are going back into society and doing a great job. I mean, it's a good thing. It really is.
Very good.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions?
If you have any other questions.
I don't see any further questions. Chair will hold over House File 2825 for consideration in our committee priorities. Thank you, Representative McNamara. Mr. Musser, now I think we are prepared to review the remaining veteran home bonding requests.
Yes, sir. Just an additional comment while I'm queuing this up. One of the things that we provide is transportation daily back and forth to the VA Medical Center at Minneapolis. And many of these, many of the residents who are at the Minneapolis facility avail themselves of VA services as well. And so as they transition out on their own, they're also able to use the VA for, you know, follow-up outpatient care and that sort of thing. So. Well.
While you're keying up that, it might be time for me to just take a moment and acknowledge, as I understand, the reason for Representative Emmer being slightly late is that it's a special day in history today. I believe you're celebrating your birthday. Mm-hmm. Could that be correct?
It might be.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy birthday.
I'm 26.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Okay, Ms. Musher, please proceed.
Thanks, sir. I'd like to talk now about the governor's recommendations. This was really supposed to be the first part of our presentation, so I'll quickly go through a few of the introductory slides. We have five homes in the state. Minneapolis is our oldest home that was built, or at least begun in 1887. Currently have 341 skilled nursing beds and 61 board and care beds. Hastings, as we just talked about, originally built as the state hospital, came to us in 1978, and they actually must have, they've got about 200 board and care beds that they operate. Silver Bay was a school that was built in 1953. We took control in 1991 and converted that to a nursing home, and that has 87 skilled beds. Laverne is in the southwest corner of the state and has 85 skilled beds. And then Fergus Falls, as we talked about earlier, also has 85 skilled beds. We talked a little bit about the planning process that the board and us, the board office, have gone through over the last year and a half. We actually convened four major planning sessions that included representatives from all of the service organizations, from the VA medical centers at St. Cloud and in Minneapolis, from the VA regional offices, of course, from our board. And as a group, we started to look at some of the prior planning data. We had just completed the master plan at Minneapolis. We had just completed a master plan development at our Hastings facility. We really wanted to try to put all of this information together and come up with a plan that was reasonable and also met the needs of the veterans in the state. Much of what we do is driven by our demographics. There's 440,000+ veterans in the state. Although the veteran population is growing smaller over time, the group of veterans that we primarily take care of today, the 65 years of age and older, is actually gradually going to be growing through the year 2000 and then leveling off. And so we don't see any decrease in the numbers of older veterans that we're going to be taking care of. We also maintain fairly active waiting lists. At Fergus, as of the 15th of February, we had 64, Laverne had 53, and Minneapolis had 244. As we went through all of these planning sessions, the board really came up with six different planning goals. One is to take care of what we have. The second is to develop appropriate settings for the care of Alzheimer's dementia patients, which is our number one diagnosis at all of our homes, with the exception of Hastings. Develop other services and initiatives for dealing with our growing and changing population. Bringing all of our facilities up to today's long-term care standards. Take care of other funding sources, such as the VA State Home Grant Program, and then eventually to develop a statewide plan for the development of services to veterans. The governor's support this year includes the following. $6 million for asset preservation, $2.4 million for an emergency power upgrade at our Minneapolis facility, $599,000 for the Laverne Special Care Unit Addition, the upgrade of the kitchen at Minneapolis for $5.3 million, and then design money for the Fergus Falls Special Care Unit Addition. Within the $6 million, I just have listed some representative projects that we would look at completing with this money. At all of our facilities, we have a list of projects in priority order, and if you're interested, Mr. Chairman, we can make that available. At Hastings and Minneapolis, these are things that we would like to accomplish with these dollars. During the Department of Health survey, we also had a fire marshal survey, which typically goes with these reviews. The fire marshal identified that our emergency power systems at the Minneapolis facility did not meet code requirements. We actually were in the process of developing a pre-design for that prior to getting the citation, because we knew we needed to do some work on that. And this will provide uninterrupted power to all of our resident care buildings, and will also include the ability to run our cooling in the summer and heating in the winter for our resident care buildings, and then allow us to keep the heat on at all of our buildings for freeze protection during the winter in case we've lost power.
Excuse me, Mr. Musser, just to catch one thing. On that ability to run the cooling and heat, is that part of the fire marshal siting, or is that just something as a part of the project as long as you're doing things?
That was part of the consultant's recommendations to include in this project.
I just simply don't know if that's a standard that is required for all of our nursing home kind of facilities around the state, nursing home and hospitals. Is that a fairly consistent standard to be able to run cooling and heating off emergency power? I don't know. If you don't know the answer, does anybody know? Representative Samuelson, do you know the answer for that?
I don't specifically know the answer, but I do know that the fire marshal has been, with their surveys, citing a lot of facilities for basically those type of things. Yeah. And so it's gotten to be very expensive.
Well, it certainly supercharges emergency power to go beyond a little lighting and things like that to be able to do that. Wow. Well, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm curious. I'll have to ask some people around. Thank you.
I believe that's part of the code violation, but I'll just double check that for you. I think the concern is at a facility our size, with the numbers of residents that we have, if we did lose power and had to go on emergency power, that if we didn't have this ability, moving this number of residents would be very, very difficult. The next project is an addition at our Laverne facility for a special care unit for Alzheimer's. This does not include any additional beds, but does include an area for residents to live, for their activities, for their dining, for their wandering. And current space that we have is fairly overcrowded. It's a 16-bed unit that we've sort of put together that has a little bump out in the middle, and that middle bump out really is used for all of the resident activities and for dining, and just as we try to make it work, but it doesn't work very well. And these are some recent shots that we had that a picture says 1,000 words. One of the things that we have with this particular population is the need to wander. Oftentimes it's a coping mechanism to relieve stress and tension, and really is a big part of this disease. Also, we find when there's a better use of space that it does in fact reduce the agitation and really create a calmer environment for our residents. This is a picture of our addition that we put at our Silver Bay facility. The proposal that we have for Laverne would be very similar. You can see that there's a little kitchen area in the middle. That kitchen area at Silver Bay, for example, they might serve breakfast. They might bake cookies because aromatherapy is a part of all this. Chocolate chip cookies baking in the oven really helps folks remember the good old days. And on the right-hand side, you can see that there's a little bit of a walking path and what we call soft corners, and it allows residents to use that as they wander and have stations for them to sit. And it's really all part of how we manage the disease. One of the things that we have at Laverne in this particular site is that it's really up on a little bit of a hill. Since we have to put the foundation in anyway, we are proposing to add a garage underneath for the storage of our vehicles. And you can see how the grade drops off here. And that's all part of this project. Now, this project, the state's 35% was included in the last bonding bill. This $599,000 is the balance of that, or the federal portion that we're asking for to be able to move this project along. The Minneapolis kitchen dining renovation, dining room's roughly about 30 years old. Not a whole lot's been done to it over that amount of time, and we believe very strongly that we need to move ahead and make some upgrades to this kitchen area. It's very crowded, storage is not very good, and really we want to improve the operational efficiency. The hot food production would be located in a better area so that we could provide more of a cafeteria serving line and a better assembly area. Hot food production, again, would be upgraded to provide menu flexibility and really a better environment for our employees to work. Storage is very difficult. We would like to be able to buy in better quantities, and this helps us to expand our freezer capability. Part of this is not only to improve the kitchen, but also improve the dining experience. Our dining room's a little sterile and not the most expensive part, but an important part is to really make our dining room more of a dining room. This also will expand and include dining for families. We don't have any private areas. If somebody wants to have a birthday party or bring a special meal in, this also will provide that space for private family dining. This particular project, the total cost is $5.3 million, and we just believe it will provide a better place for employees to work and improve the efficiency of the kitchen and bring it up to today's standards. And finally, we talked about our Fergus Falls special care unit. The governor has recommended that the design money for this be included in the bonding bill. We've already talked about this project, but we feel this is certainly an important start to getting this project off the ground. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll open it up for any additional questions.
Mr. Chair, could I just make a couple comments as a board member? Being on the board about a year and a half, one of the first things I did was tour all the facilities, and when you do that, you're struck by the fact that we really have two categories. We have the new facilities, or relatively new facilities, which are Laverne and Fergus Falls, and then we have the older facilities, Minneapolis obviously being the oldest in this campus setting, where we have really pretty high costs in a lot of ways because we have historical buildings and things that are not cheap to maintain, and a number of other issues. The issue that we're talking about here for the dining room upgrade is a facility that was really never designed to be an intensive nursing facility when it was built. And so we have to go back through this whole process of trying to take and make the experience. And one of the things that struck me, and what I've tried to do, is put myself in the shoes of the residents that have to be there. They're there 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when you look at some of our surroundings in the Minneapolis facility, the dining facility, I think is a good example. It is sterile. You don't have windows to look to the outside. You don't have many of these things. We've also had an issue trying to upgrade some of the floor facilities where you don't have the mobility to have our residents come down to the dining room. But these things are very, very important. And the same thing is true at our Silver Bay facility, where it was an old elementary school that we've converted. But if you walk in the front door of that, it still looks like an old elementary school. We've still got tile and things on the walls that make it look very institutional, as opposed to being a setting where, again, our people are there, our residents are there 24/7. So as we look at this over a period of time, it is expensive to upgrade these facilities, because when we take older facilities like the Silver Bay School, or take the Hastings facility and have to go through and renovate them, or take the Minneapolis campus and try to work within that existing envelope, it's going to cost money to do that. But I think at the same point in time, it's critically important that we do, and quite frankly, some of the issues at Minneapolis that we were cited for were issues because we really had underinvested in the past in terms of some facility issues. So I would really like to urge your consideration. We're very appreciative of what the governor has recommended. But we also would obviously like to have you give some consideration to doing some of these other projects, such as the Hastings project or Minneapolis, and some of these other facility issues, because I think in terms of caring for our veterans and putting ourselves in the shoes, if it were us or our family members being there, I think we'd like to see some of these things be done.
Mr. Erickson, you're on a subject that intrigues me, and I try to approach this as diplomatic as I can, because I realize that we have historic buildings. And we have some corollary, frankly, in regional treatment center areas, other places, where we have buildings that have entirely worn out their financial viability, if you will, and perhaps in another part, at least in that case, doesn't fit sort of the care model. You mentioned some. I mean, I've been through some of the facilities, and some of it, I look at it and say, I don't know how you ever make it feel like what we now see in places that are newly constructed and so forth. So I'm sort of struggling, because I know you're very much a strategic thinker. I mean, what extent can you look strategically at the facilities we have and say, for kind of a 50-year outlook, what's the right thing to do? Do you chip away at some of these challenges, or do you sort of say, you know what, maybe that one's never going to be, and we're going to have to do something different? I'm not trying to design something, but I think I've seen you work enough to know you must go through some of that kind of thinking. And if you have, what do you see?
Well, Chair Bradley, I think most importantly, the facilities that we have, we've already invested a lot in. But there has been a discussion, I think even a bill was introduced to actually pass last year, or the last legislative cycle, to look at a facility at Wilmert. And one of the things that was suggested was that we could perhaps reuse one of the old sites. And our board looked at that and we said, there's no way that, given what we know about the cost of doing these things, that makes sense. So from a public policy standpoint, that certainly is one thing. And one of my comments about the Silver Bay facility is I think we've already spent more on an aggregate square footage basis to go through that facility and renovate and do things than a new facility would have cost at that same point in time, and we're not done. And we just got done spending a lot of money at the Hastings facility, and again, that situation is similar. It is still a facility that has a number of issues. I think relative to our population there, it probably is something that is more conducive to that type than it would be to an intensive nursing home situation. But that's very much something that we have wrestled with. The Minneapolis campus is a unique situation, and I think you probably are in a situation there with Building 16, which is the main nursing care facility, that with some dollars, I think you may be able to do that on an approximately cost-effective basis. And then given the location and the transportation network and just what you do with the other things, I think that's important. But I do believe, Steve, that in one of the proposals here that we're actually talking about demolishing a building.
Right.
And so that is given consideration, and I think you have to look. The adult daycare facility that's proposed on the Minneapolis campus is the type of thing that you can take an older structure like that and make it into quite an attractive space. Now, you are still going to have higher operating costs. There's no way you won't. We faced this issue when I was at the University of Minnesota, and I actually instituted, we tore down more things in the 4 years that I was there, including Memorial Stadium, that some people hated to see go, but the facility was something that was not supportive of what we could use it for, and did that for a number of other buildings. So I think it's something that we have to actively look at, and needs to be a clear thing. But I think the easiest thing from a public policy standpoint is not, if we are going to add to our list of veterans' homes around the state, and I think there can be good reasons for doing that, let's take it and do it with something that is really designed for the purposes that we're going to use it for, not try to reuse something, and I think really kid ourselves as to the long-term cost.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I saw you nodding your head, so I can sense that you've been doing. I know we certainly have over many, many years, where we were spending money in places, on buildings sitting there that you could sure spend better on, so we're finally making some progress in the overall regional treatment center. The other sort of question, we have before us in our summaries the indications of your agency request, and then we have indications of the governor's recommendations to us and to the bonding committees as well. And of course, I mean, as always happens, there are some differences, and I don't mean to put you on the spot bullet by bullet, But if you have any advice to this committee in terms of anything really special that you think, I mean, you may say in aggregate that you'd like to see all of it. I can understand that. But are there any places where you would particularly focus and say, we sure hope you'll consider something different than what the governor's recommended and why?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that we're a little surprised that the governor didn't recommend adult daycare, since he had recommended that in the previous year. And we do have the 35% available from the last bonding bill, and to be able to fund the balance of that and allow us to move ahead with really what is the first phase of our master plan development at Minneapolis, you know, would obviously please us greatly. And I think the other thing that you may want to take in consideration, that even though the federal funds are a little doubtful, you know, the VA still is funding, at least this year, some projects, and next year they've plugged in another $85 million into their VA State Home Construction Grant Program. And so while we're asking for the total amount, and we would not be adverse to for a number of these projects that the governor didn't recommend, at least the state's 35% share to allow us then to compete for federal dollars when they become available. One of the things that we have to be able to compete for the federal share is the state's commitment. And once we get the state's commitment, that puts us in a far better bargaining position for these dollars. For example, the VA funded, they have a whole list in their Priority 1 category, they funded down to Priority 13. The adult daycare at Minneapolis and the Laverne Special Care Unit Edition are Priorities 16 and 17. We believe that if there is money next year in the federal budget, that those dollars will be available to be able to fund the rest of these projects. I think the other important part of this is that even if the state were to fund all of 100% of the project, it still puts us in line for reimbursement of the VA dollars. And I can give you four examples that we are currently going to be getting reimbursement for that we've been working on. One is the Minneapolis drain pipe replacement project that was funded in the last bonding bill. The Silver Bay roof replacement project, and then phase two and phase three at Hastings. And so it's my understanding on March 21st, the Secretary of the VA is going to be here and present three big checks, which will total about $11.8 million, that the state's going to get back in reimbursement. We can play the game different ways. The real important thing, though, is to have the state make its commitment so that at least we can compete for the federal dollars. If we can get full funding up front, it still puts us in line for getting reimbursed for these projects when the dollars become available. And these funds then, at least the majority of the money that is being returned at this point in time is being moved back into the general account.
I think Mr. Musser would be wise for us to try to follow up. I kind of knew that there was this kind of complexity, and if you go for full and we get reimbursed, in some respects we're missing an opportunity to do some things if we knew that up ahead. So we were leveraging it for other projects, because when it comes back that way, for the bonding side of it, after a few years, we just cancel. I mean, I think there's a process after about 4 years where if it's not been used, we cancel. But in this case, literally more money comes back. I don't exactly know how that flows into the general fund or whatever, but in some respects, that's kind of a missed opportunity. So I'm not really sure how to sort this out, but I think it would be helpful to have some additional advice for you in places where, if we were advising the bonding committee, that maybe anticipating the federal shares, if we had a good crystal ball, so we weren't putting our state bonding money on the line, and then knowing darn well that a portion of that's going to come back, and that means we didn't do something else that we might have otherwise done. I hope I've made myself somewhat clear, if I've understood you correctly.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I understand what you're saying, and I'd be happy to have some continued dialogue.
Yeah, maybe if you could sort of put that sort of together, and if you, I think you already did make some potential, but if you could put that into a letter to me, and I'd try to be sure to continue to advise the bonding committee as this all moves forward. It's a little bit more than what is typically asked for a committee, because normally we're pretty much just asked to prioritize, but I think there's another dimension that you bring here on these things that is important for the bonding committee to have a handle on.
Chair Bradley, if
Mr. Erickson?
If I could add one point, this adult daycare facility project, I think, is one that is very interesting and I think does exactly the kind of thing that we really want to be doing for our veteran population, and that is to permit them to stay in their homes longer. It's a daycare facility, so there would be transportation arranged to pick them up and bring them back. And anything that we can do, I think, to encourage that is going to be probably more cost-effective over the long run, but I think clearly in terms of the quality of life of our veterans, that probably provides the highest quality, and it also facilitates helping the families to take care of them, because one of the issues is, again, if you're a caregiver for 24/7, that's a pretty wearing proposition and one that you probably need some relief from occasionally. So this is one of those things that I think is an innovative program that would attempt to really help our veterans have a higher quality of life, and could be a pilot, I think, for others.
Yeah. And Mr. Erickson, to that point, it's one that I think Mr. Musser and I have talked about, and I kind of hinted when I asked the question about what if a veteran wishes to go to a local nursing home, do the, in some respects, the benefits follow them. What you said about adult daycare is not unusual on a broader basis in our society and for other places. And we do have, I think, expanding adult daycare, especially nursing homes that have some additional beds and use some of them for those things. So I always sort of struggle with sort of community capacity as compared to specific veteran homes capacity. And it's never quite clear to me, and the same question comes to mind for me on the case of adult daycare. To what extent does community capacity, general community capacity, potentially offer some help for that same audience? Or is it, are we so exclusive in terms of the way the monies can follow that help the veterans that it's got to be on a veterans facility and within the veterans board programs? Mr. Musher, I think you're prepared to make a comment to that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the unique features of adult daycare within our system is the fact that we're able to get kind of 50% per diem coverage for our daily costs. You know, if, for example, our costs were $74 a day, the VA would cover half of that, and the remainder would be covered by the family or the resident. It makes it far more affordable for folks who have small incomes to be able to avail themselves of this service. The other thing that we have to provide is transportation. It's a key requirement of the VA if we're going to be getting per diems that we provide this. And so just in my research of adult daycare, one of the reasons adult daycares may fail is because of the transportation piece. And we will be providing that when necessary.
Well, thank you. I appreciate, by the way, the additional advice. I don't mean to pick any sides or anything, but sometimes we avoid giving you the opportunity to advise us beyond the governor's recommendations, and I appreciate you taking advantage of that today.
I certainly
stand ready as we follow up here with any additional advice. I don't see any additional questions from members. The chair will, for the record, indicate that the additional Veterans Home Board bonding request will be held over for consideration in our prioritization. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Members, let me do my best to sort of profile our plan for next week's. I hope you recognize that on March 1st, I didn't get a total count, but we might have had 100 bills referred to our committee. And we are working very fast trying to sort of catch up and sort of schedule our next 3 weeks or so. We have very, very little time, and we want to be as fair as we possibly can. So next week, our plan is this for, as far as we could go, is about Wednesday and Thursday. On Wednesday, it's our plan. We have at least preliminarily gone through the bills, and we'll try to sweep another pass, but it's easiest for us to facilitate on Wednesday what I sort of would call non-controversial, straightforward bills that we can just sort of do without a lot of additional preparation. So we have a number of those that we will do, and we will try to post those as soon as we can. On Thursday, we have a shortened meeting because the state of the state. However, I think we'll have enough time, I hope, to finish our work on this, what we just have been doing these last few days, and that is the prioritization of this committee. That still makes us kind of on a tight timeline as far as being able to do that. I intend to turn to Representative Huntley as the minority lead in this committee for some advice. I think it's worked relatively well. To do just like I would almost in an omnibus bill, to put together something that I think would be a start point for the committee, and then we can discuss from there, and I will try to do that again. But I'm hoping that we would be able to conclude our business on making our recommendations for the bonding committee, and they would be as we've done in the past, and that is to try to put these things in priority order. All of the proposals that are before us would be placed in a priority order. And then we will move on. It's just too early to talk about Friday, so I will have to beg your indulgence that hopefully by early next week we'll be able to tell you what our plan will be on Friday, but we don't have the luxury of just sort of waiting and leaving it open. So Wednesday, again, will be relatively non-controversial bills to us. Thursday will be our bonding priorities. I think in the meantime, Representative Abler has meetings going on as well, so we've got plenty going on, and it will only get hotter and faster as the time moves on. Are there any other questions? I don't think we have a quorum to move on the minutes, so we'll hold that for next time. Seeing none, we're adjourned until next Wednesday.